three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Hello and welcome to NBL Pocket Podcast. My name is Andrew Canyon and I'm the co-host of this fine show. With me today, we have our standard bearer, Joseph Corr. Also with us, a very special guest. I'm not even going to introduce him. I'm going to let him introduce himself because I won't do it the honor in which it deserves. So I'll pass over to our special guest right now to say hello.
Hello, and may I say I feel very guilty. I feel like I'm cheating on Brad Rosen, and that's all I want to say.
We'll have him on another time. Can I start off by just saying, and I said this to Boddy just a moment ago, but I had to get recorded for posterity, is that I have been a fan of his writing for probably 30 years, which is outing both our ages far too much.
Yep.
I remember reading your stuff back in the paper newspaper days when you were. It was Basketball Week, I think, was the one that came out most often. And I was a subscriber or whatever. I'd certainly go to the newsagent each week and pick up a copy to read my box scores and see what happened in the NBL. And Boddy's articles were always a highlight of those. He was always a bit of a fanboy of Adelaide 36ers at the time, but it was okay. I knew where he was coming from. And I've read his website since you started writing on it. And I'm a big fan. So if it's a bit fanboyish in my conversation with you today, that's why, but I'll try and keep it honest and forthright.
Thank you, Andrew. Can I say that having written basketball for 43 years officially and about four or five unofficially, it's nice to find a fanboy.
It's only taking you this long.
Yeah, and someone that says, you bastard. You have to say that about,
I'll probably be doing that by the end of the episode. Don't worry.
People listening out there, if you haven't got a raincoat, get one because you're going to get wet listening to this. What we're talking about today, we're doing a bunch of stuff. We're going to go through the awards, the semi-final matchups. We're going to talk about this new Channel 10 A-League deal and what it means for the NBL as best we can, looking at it from the outside in. A little bit look back at the NBL Cup. Was it worth it? Was it not worth it? The good, the bad, the ugly out of that. And then we're going to cast our eyes over the dead, the teams that didn't make it, New Zealand, Brisbane, Sydney predominantly, because Andrew and I have done Adelaide and Cairns, but we'll certainly get Boddy's thoughts on Adelaide. Gentlemen, NBL Awards.
Before we kick off, Before we kick off, traditionally at this point we would talk about a certain book that needed to be sold.
I've got my last coffee. Here it is.
What a great time to have the author of said book with us as we have run out of copies to sell.
I know. Hey,
I've got another box of 50 here if you want them.
Oh, no.
I'm still forging Brett's signature.
I need another paperweight doorstop. That's great. Send them over. Yeah, so, but people out there, seriously, I have sold out of my copies here. But if you want a copy, get in touch with either of us. We'll work something out. But yeah. It's not going to be speedy.
But it's a great coffee table book, especially if one of the four legs is about an inch shorter.
Exactly.
That's where my copy is. Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Perfect.
Anyway,
for the job.
We've all read it. We all like it. But yeah, if you want a copy, contact us. But actually, another quick departure. We got some really sweet news feedback from Waleed, and I want to read this because it's nice and whatever. He says, I'm a keen listener to the pod. I rate it very highly. By miles, my favorite. I love your approach, variety, honesty, humor, and multiple insights into the NBL. I count down the days until you release each ep. Thank you so much for what you do, Joe and Andrew. Keep up the amazing work. Andrew has added another dimension. I miss him when he isn't on the discussion. You guys make an amazing team. Isn't that sweet? And then he also
says, that is lovely.
But it still pales in comparison to my absolute favorite podcast, the Brad and Boddy podcast. So, I'm happy with second best. That's fine.
Is this Waleed Smith from the deli up the road?
I don't know. It could be maybe from the project. I don't know. But Waleed, thank you for listening.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic piece of feedback, especially that bit about Andrew. I really like that. I feel like he got to the crux of the matter when he talked about that.
And then he topped it by saying Brad and Boddy.
You know, it's a win-win. Let's do the awards. Let's start with the awards. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to do it differently. We're not just going to give our favorites. We're going to ascertain who we think is the favorite for each award from the three nominees. and then argue against that if we have an argument against who we think is the winner. So with MVP, we know the three nominees. They're Bryce Cotton, Sobey, and Harvey. Do we all agree that Cotton's the favourite, or do we have something different?
I think that it's good of you not even to give the first name of Harvey or Sobey. I think, you know, we need to know it's Bryce Cotton, but yeah, Harvey Sobey, who the hell are they? I think it's really harsh on Jeremy Kendall, but that's as far as I want to go.
Andrew, do we have anything?
There's no doubt. I think this was probably Cotton's worst season, but he's still the MVP of the league. Yep. So take that.
I'm going to make the case for Harvey.
Okay.
Huge scorer, huge load on him. Pardon the pun. Freudian slip. Scored in bunches. That team was. That's not a good roster. You know, Gorgon's done thing, but that's not a good roster. He's scored like crazy. When you talk about the word value, buddy, you've been a writer for a long time. The word value is you get out what you put in. You got out from Harvey what you put into him, and he played all but one game, I think, this season. Cotton missed a bunch. Do either of you have any problem with the amount of time that Cotton's missed and his MVP chances? He missed 10% of the season.
No, I don't. The old system where they used to give votes after each game would have definitely ruled him out. That would have made Tyler Harvey this year's winner, or maybe even Sobey, you know, either one of those two, because they used to do that, you know, points per game. I think you got up to 10. So missing all those games would have cost him. But no, now that we're doing it on a sort of basis of who is the best player in the league, I think Cotton wins. Doesn't matter how many games he missed. Well, I wouldn't have wanted him to miss too many more, but he coasts in, I think.
That word, we're not talking best and fairest. We're talking about the word value. That doesn't change your impression, no?
No, because he brings so much. Like he plays defense. He runs the team when they need to be run, and then he wins games when they need to be won. So I think Tyler Harvey gives you two of those three. I don't think
I got a question for you, Andrew. Yeah. We were texting back and forth about Cotton's, I want to say, 5 to 7 game slump. That doesn't change things for you?
No, it doesn't, because he wasn't performing, but he was still bending defenses. They were still running the defense to say, how do we stop this guy? And while he wasn't scoring, he was getting 10 assists per game. So I think he's just MVP in a different way during that period.
Because a Bryce Cotton slump is a Tony Crocker streak.
I want to ask this question. It? Cotton, Harvey, Sobey, should Landau be on this list? And if so, at the expense of whom?
No. If Landau's on that list, why is Mooney not on the list? Exactly. So, no.
Should Mooney be on this list at the expense of anyone? And if so, who?
No.
You're happy with this? You sure? Nathan Sobey over Jock Landau? He anchored the team, the offense and defense of the best team in the league.
Look, if you're just going to start throwing facts in, I'm out now.
No, can you imagine how bad how bad and boring would the Bullets have been without Sobey? I mean, they were bad and boring with him, so you take him out and wow.
And he gives you someone to dislike as well. You know, like he covers all the whole spectrum.
That team was 9-7 with Vic Law, 9-11 without him, I think, or something like that. They had a winning record with Vic Law and Sobey. They had a losing record without him. I think Vic Law was like, I wouldn't have hated seeing Landau over Sobey. Just saying.
Landau was solid and consistent, and you knew what you were going to get on a weekly basis from him. You can make the argument for him in the same way you can make the argument for John Mooney, but. You know, as you said, it's not best and fairest. It's the most valuable. Who was most valuable to their team? If you took Landale out, did you get Joel?
I think that'd be a disaster. I really do. But we talked.
Hang on.
About
what about Cotton. White? Let's keep White in there. Let's say White doesn't get hurt. Landale gets hurt. Do they finish top?
He's not ready for a best. You're replacing the best player on that team. I think a Landale load. Pardon the pun again, Freudian slip again. But Jack White couldn't step into that. I think Jock Landau was really good. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah,
but he was really good.
But we talk about bending offenses. I mean, Cotton, we bent that offense, and even when he didn't score, man, Jock Landau was running a double team every time. Chris Golding doesn't have the season he has without Jock Landau. No way.
Yeah, it's a shame they didn't have a final four rather than a final three.
Okay. Happy to move on, Luke? Yes.
Yeah.
Coach of the Year. Who do we ascertain is the favourite of these two? Brian Gorgeon, Dean Vickerman, Trevor Gleeson. Boddy, who's your vote for?
I think you've got a – it's a real tough one for me because I think what Trevor Gleeson does is underestimated to the extreme, and especially what he's done with a lineup that most people, particularly in the Eastern States, gave no chance of making the playoffs, let alone winning the thing. So I think a lot of what he does gets overlooked. But then when you look at Gorge, a lot of what he does gets a little bit of extra praise. You know, there's a lot of people saying, oh, look, he took this team from last to the playoffs. All right, okay, they finished last. That club finished last, but he's actually changed that team around, brought some significant players in and has changed the culture, got the name back, which I think was significant that they got the Illawarra name back during the season. And I wouldn't underestimate at all what he's done. So I give him the edge slightly. I'm going with Gorge. I give Vickerman nothing.
Andrew Canyon.
Yeah, I'll back up that last statement. I give Vickerman nothing except bad sub patterns.
Yeah,
I would like to see Gleeson win it. And it's almost a body of work argument more so than even this season. Although, like was said, nobody expected the Wildcats to make the finals this year, and there they are again. But I think Gorgon will win it because of the narrative, because of the love of the Gorge.
Yep.
And he has done good work. But
the love of the Gorge. We all love a bit of Gorge, don't we?
Yeah. We sure do. Gorging on Gorge. But I think Gleeson, that offense is a thing of beauty. And in an era where they say where it's all pick and roll and it's isolation and it's, you know, threes or nothing, I think the offense that Gleeson runs is poetry. It's so enjoyable to watch. If you watch it live and you really watch all the movement off the ball, the multiple screens, the changes, the little wrinkles that get thrown into it, it's amazing. So I think just on pure coaching, just coaching that offense in such a way that he gets everybody on board with it, he's the coach of the year.
Can I say that in I first saw that offense that he is running, run by West Adelaide's women's team in South Australia in 1978. The offense is running the flex offense. So he's doing the old back to the future sort of situation and running an offense that is a proven successful offense, which he's then tinkered with to add the little moments, the little extras and back screens for Bryce. And they're succeeding. And it just makes this whole three and key, you know, shoot the three-point shot or drive into the keyway, the modern philosophy. It just puts it to shame because if Bryce Cotton doesn't get injured, we're talking about them winning a championship, running something that's, you know, 40 plus years old.
A classic never dies, buddy. Yeah. We talked about gorging on Gorge. I was ready to gouge Gorge.
a few weeks ago.
I was ready. I was like, you know what? I'm not buying this Gorge narrative. I didn't pick them to make the four because I didn't like their roster. I still don't like their roster. They've got guys who were not good last year. I mean, AJ Ogilvie's a starter for them. And he was almost out of. He was the last person signed this season, I believe.
Tim Conrad, but same situation.
Got, though. Yeah. Two of the last guys picked to play on the team. So, and then you look at the Dinga Dell thing. Like, could Gorgon have handled? Could Gleeson have handled something like that? And a marquee player not playing and getting cut and keeping a team together and winning thereafter.
And it turns out Ding Ding is better than Dinga Dell.
Ding Ding. He has not played for 2 years on two different teams, and all of a sudden he's a starter in Illawarra. Unbelievable.
That's a magnificent achievement, actually, what he's done there. Really.
Yeah, amazing. Good for him.
Before we get off this, how do we rate Joey Wright's performance this year? Because he was still paid this year. He got a one-year payout. So I thought the 36ers did pretty poorly.
You know, I think Joey's got his reputation. I think Gorgon's going to win it. I think he should win it as well. I think Andrew's kind of going with Gleeson. And I liked your answer, by the way.
Andrew, I like that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Most happy to move on, buddy?
Yeah. I feel disrespected, though, because you liked his answer and you didn't give any commentary on mine. So that's fine. I'm just out for a little while.
Sorry,
buddy. Who's the regular here? Come on.
Exactly.
Well, maybe. There's always room for improvement. Segway, most improved. Finn Delaney. Jordan Hunter, Sam Froehlich. Is there a consensus among us? Who do we want to win?
Jeremy Kendall, because I think what he showed.
Not the most teams.
Sorry.
Andrew, Consent. I'm body buzzed. Timeout. Andrew, who you got over three?
This is a really hard one. This is probably the hardest one because they've all shown huge improvement. I think I'm going to lean towards Froehling, just because he's become such a centerpiece for that team. They rely on him so much, and he's really stepped up. But
not
gosh,
sure.
It's hard.
Body, who you got?
It's hard. When Gorge was appointed coach of the Hawks, as they were at that moment, I wrote a piece then saying Sam Froehling will win the most improved player because I thought he showed great potential last year in a pretty crummy environment. And I thought once Gorge gets a hold of this kid and sees what he can do, this kid will be the most improved player. So I went for that before a ball was tossed in the air. So I don't see any reason to come off that except that Finn Delaney was exceptional this year. Finn Delaney actually rose to the heights that we have expected of him for a couple of years. I don't know whether it was the injury absences of players in and out, whatever it was, and he was a constant, but he had a career year, and I think he'll be unlucky, but I'm going with Froehling. Jordan Hunter, yeah, I don't put him in the same conversation. I think he's a tier back.
Yeah. I actually go Delaney, and the reason why is I think it's not easy, but for Sam Froehling to go from hurt and no minutes last year to then get a whack of minutes, you know, it's easy to put up the stat, or easier to put up the stats it is. Whereas Delaney's gone from a really good player to now what, maybe even NBL second team. That although the statistical jump is not as big, I think to make
he's
that
taken
really,
a step. He's taken a step.
I really like to applaud that and award that. So I'd give it to Delaney, but really tough one. I don't think Hunter's in the conversation for me, but certainly Froehling. Either of them is fine by me.
Yep.
Sixth man. I find these three candidates interesting. And if you guys have got one you'd prefer to nominate for this, please do. But it's Joe Oluwole, Chula, Melbourne United, Kyle Adnam, Scotty Hobson.
Yeah, I know. What's Jesse Wagg stuff got to do, really?
Wow. Stop falling over anytime there's a breeze.
Missing late game. Actually, we're not. No, we're not going to do that.
Not going to talk about the layup?
Okay. No, we're not going to. The miss layup to win the game? We're not going to talk about it. No. Sixth, Matt. Who is your answer to off the grid? Does anyone have an off the grid answer for this award?
Jason Kadee.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a fair play. I don't have one off the grid. I'm just going to say Kyle Adnam should win it.
Yeah. Why, Andrew?
Yeah, why?
Andrew? Why? Because he became a real critical part of that Phoenix team, particularly through the mid part of that season, sort of the cup and a bit beyond, I think. He was coming off the bench and just lighting up the scoreboard while semi-running the team. I just liked his play and looking at his competition. Scotty Hobson, this is where it comes in too. Scotty Hobson, done nothing all year. Give me a break. JLA, well, he's got one job and that's to come in and shoot the ball. Like we've joked about that a lot, Joe and I.
And a lot of other people, don't worry.
Yeah, he's – and look, fine if that's his role, but best six man, I mean, you can put any person on that and just say, when you get the ball, shoot it. Any person in the league is going to be okay with that.
Yeah. So we don't – again, we're not talking Jeremy Kendall. We don't want to mention him because he was coming off the bench for quite a few teams. And he could even get sixth team.
I'm going to jump in here. I'm going to get – Andrew, I know Adnam. I feel like he, you know, really only shone in Kiefer Seif's absence. And then the role of the sixth man, like if you're going to be real specific about it, like I don't think he was ever very good when backing up Sykes. I thought he did better when the limelight was back to him, but I thought he shot him into games. I thought he shot him out of games at times.
There you go. And that's
who
that's
you
going
with, buddy?
Well, I'm going to say Kyle Adnam is, to me, what I call a zero player. And I don't, ooh. I mean, that probably sounds offensive. I don't mean it as offensive.
Just slightly.
But what I'm saying in that is that for every great thing he does, there's a stupid thing as well. And so one great thing, oh, terrific. The narrative is, oh, look, he's going to get a massive contract to go down to Tasmania. He's going to this, he's going to that. He turns the ball over in the next play, or he takes a bad shot on the next play, or he looks off Mitch Creek, the star of the team, to force some other thing. Okay, next play, he hits a three-pointer. So we're back to zero all the time. I don't think you gain greatly. And I think you hit it on the head, Joseph, when you said during that period when other guys were out and he got to be in the spotlight, well, yeah, he probably shone during that period. But I find his performance fluctuates too much. And I think the general narrative on the commentary is that these guys that make the calls, they pick a player and they decide something about that player, and then nothing's going to change the narrative. It doesn't matter how many times he throws it into the third row, nothing's going to change the narrative. I saw with Josh Giddey. I think Josh Giddey had some outstanding games. He was phenomenal for an 18-year-old. There were other games where he looked every bit of an 18-year-old, but we didn't mention any of those, or we didn't mention six turnovers or whatever, because that's a little bit negative. Let's just stay upbeat and cheerly.
Happy thoughts.
Yeah, smiley face, stamp, you know. And I feel that a bit with Kyle Adenham. So I think of these three choices, these are the three lamest. They're obviously the three best, but of all the categories, this is the most difficult, because you can make a case against any of them.
But who are you going with, buddy?
Kyle Adenham. I think he's great.
I go with Joel Achiuwa. He was a flamethrower. He did what was on the tin, you know? He's going to come in, he's going to catch it, and then promptly thereafter catch it, he's going to shoot it. But he scored a lot.
He got some shots, he got some rebounds. He got a lot of rebounds.
I've been a bit harsh. Man, and they relied on him as well. Like, I thought Kyle Adenham was kind of like feast or famine. Okay, it's not working. Yes. All right, we'll go back to Creek. Where Joel Achiuwa was like, we need 10-plus points from you every game. And more often than not, he delivered. So I'm going JLA.
Yeah, I'm changing camp. I'm leaving Kyle Adenham. I'm going with JLA. I'm jumping off.
I'm half convinced too. So watch out.
Kyle Adenham, he's an Avenger. I'm going with the JLA, good old Justice League.
Defensive Player of the Year, the Damian Martin Trophy. Justin Simon, Mitch Norton, Abercrombie. First and foremost, is there someone that should be on this list who's not?
Is there someone?
Oh, go, buddy.
Sunday Dej.
Yeah, same. Andrew, have you got that name or another one? Or?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the obvious missing name.
Abercrombie? He missed games. I can't believe he's on this list.
Oh, he did play some good defense, particularly on the point guards of opposition team. Well, you know, are we going to give Bryce Cotton the MVP?
I'm kind of debating the opposite because of the 10% of the games.
Even though you couldn't remember Harvey or Sobey's first names.
Don't start with me. Andrew would not do this to me. All right, so Andrew, let's go with you, Andrew. Who are you voting for?
Yeah, again, tough one. I'm gonna be the total homer here, and I'm gonna vote for Mitch Norton.
Yeah.
Okay, but I think the league is gonna vote for Abercrombie.
What about Mitch McCarron? Yeah. What about Mitch McCarron and Shay Illy? They don't even get a game.
Oh, Shay Illy, good point. Yes.
Those guys, you know, double teamed and tag teamed a lot of guards into submission.
Udo Barber was the only one who could stop Cotton. So there's another narrative. I'll put the argument forward for Mitch Norton, okay? He doesn't get a lot of blocks. He doesn't necessarily get a lot of steals, but he plays quality defense. He makes a guy work for everything. He chases over every screen. He does all the correct defensive things. He is a great defender, but he's not a spectacular defender. Mm. So that's my argument for Mitch. Bring it.
Body, what do you got?
I'm just listening to what you're saying, and I thought for a second you were describing Sean Bruce, because down the end of a couple of big games, he played some outstanding defense on very good players, and that's what Mitch Norton will do too. I don't tend to enjoy players that flop. Not that Mitch flops, but he does fall over. I mean, there must be some sort of disease coming off Jesse Wagstaff. You sit next to him and you're like, oh, wow, there's a prison here, and you just fall off the bench.
It's not anyway. Jesse. It's Sean Redditch. That's where it started, of course. That's right, yes.
No, I'm actually leaning toward Justin. Is it Justin? Jason? Simon? Justin Simon, because when he made that his focus, there were some games where it wasn't his focus, but when he made that his primary focus, he did an outstanding job on a lot of different players, a lot of different types of players, from point guards to shooters to three men. And I like that sort of range of versatility. It sort of reminded me of a Darnell Mee type of defender who could guard a point guard and he could guard a Glenn Saville. You know, he could go across the board. I like that about Justin.
A Glenn Saville or a Jimmy Saville?
Both, actually. You can cover the lot. You can have a whole several row and you can handle a lot of them.
Can I take a quick departure here? I want to talk about the Hawks. This is completely off the awards. Did anyone enjoy their style of play? And I look at the way their roster was constructed, a import scoring guard who consumed a quarter to 30% of their offense, and then a wing defender, and then they just kind of left the big spots to whatever Australian talent would step up. Did you guys enjoy watching them play, that team? I'll start with Boddy. Did you enjoy them?
Hang on, but when you asked that question, did you expect them to be different when they had, well, when had they had, sorry, a Denga Dell that lived up to expectations, or a Cam Besto that stayed out of the hospital ward? You know, like if they, those guys had stayed healthy, would we have looked at them differently? Did they have to adapt on the run and change? So yes, I didn't particularly enjoy watching them. I enjoyed watching Cairns more, to be honest, because I was always going to get a giggle out of, you know, Mirko Djurić slamming the ball into the floor and into his face, or something silly. You know, there was always going to be something good to enjoy about Cairns. But no, Illawarra, I did enjoy watching them beat Perth, not because it was Perth, but because it was so important, and the joy and of reaching the playoffs. Although that was pretty good. I did enjoy that, but they're so reliant on Tyler Harvey that's why they won't beat Perth in a 3-game series, even without Bryce Cotton playing for the Wildcats.
Andrew, what do you think of the Hawks? And because they got pretty cynical towards the end. It was get over half court, give it to Harvey, let him bomb away, hopefully get a rebound. They lost a bit of their fancy, but yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I didn't really love their style of play. But the thing I was in awe of all year was what a departure it was from previous Gorgian coach teams, where it was very much pound the ball, you know, use the clock, grind it out, pummel the opposition. This was a totally different approach. It was run down, kick it around a bit, and then shoot a three. Just totally different.
Did you see a departure body in the style?
Oh, the game against Cairns where they shot, 45 threes or something, some sort of record, and made six or something. It was like, what? Like, Gorge never would have stood for that in a different era. So, yeah, that was definitely a different looking team to what he was used to. That defense was still their staple, though. Let's be fair.
That's true. Their
tails off defensively, and that allows them to get away with some stuff offensively or hide some of their offensive limitations.
Apparently, Jason Smith, though, is still hiding in a cupboard saying, why couldn't I be playing now? I mean.
Okay.
Don't
say closet.
No, don't.
Not that, you know what I mean.
Rookie of the year. That was funny. The rookie of the year. I think we all agree the consensus is he cannot lose this award. He never could have lost this award.
No.
I'll ask this question of you both then. If I think the next up is Vasiljevic. If he'd been healthy all year, continued to play as he was on a merit-based system, would he have eclipsed Giddy and won this award? I'll start with you, Boddy.
No, because the narrative on Giddy was just so overwhelming that, like I said, I really enjoyed watching him play most of the time, but there were a lot of games, not just a few, where he was an 18-year-old making an 18-year-old's mistakes. Mm-hmm. But the you know, we never heard about that. There was not much said about his 3-point accuracy or his mid-range or any of that. It was all, you know, how great he is for 18 and all that sort of stuff, and all true. So I just think Vasiljevic would have got lost in that, unfortunately, because I thought he was going great.
Pure merit, if he had not got hurt.
I think he had an outstanding season. I think the fact that there were injuries and there were other problems within that team, and he was able to get chances that he may not have otherwise, he sees them. He sees them, and he was great. I love the way he played. So, I think in a merit system, I think Vasiljevic might well have been the winner.
Andrew, what do you think?
Yeah, much the same. I don't really have anything different to add to all that. I just agree wholeheartedly about everything Boddy just said. He's a wise man.
What do you think of Jessup? I thought he was up and down like a yo-yo, but when he was on. I mean, I thought he was really good, but no hope for this award, even on merit, even on storyline.
No, he's a good shooter, but not always. If his shot wasn't going down, you weren't getting much else from him.
That was the problem, is that he's not emotionally mature enough yet to he's so hooked. His scoring is so important to him that when he's not scoring, he's not evolved enough yet as a basketballer to know that, okay, you know what? I'm just going to work my tail off defensively. I'm going to stop this guy. I'm going to get the next 5 rebounds. I'm going to find a different focus and contribute to my team in a different way. If his shot's not dropping, then his jaw is dropping. And
I agree.
That's why I wouldn't have him in the three. I wouldn't even have him in the three.
Is there anyone – actually, before we go on to that list, I want to say something about Jessup. I just found he never quite had a move that could get himself to the line. I always thought when he got to the line, it was because he'd got hot and guys were trying to trace him off the line and they bumped him or whatever, and then he put the ball in the deck.
Yep.
He never had that move to like, oh, okay, I'm not shooting well. Here's how I'm going to get to the line. I never thought he quite worked that out. Is there anyone left off this list that we would have had? I don't even know.
I would like to have seen Luke – Yeah, Luke Travers, I would have had there.
Yeah, yeah, good one. Yeah. In the place of Jessup.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's the whole John Mooney argument. Should he be a rookie?
No.
It's his first contract.
Nah, that's just bullshit talk from people who've got nothing to say.
Let's jump onto this award. The most outstanding media coverage. I have a strong candidate, the Brad and Body Podcast.
I don't even know there is such a category. I was looking at Import of the Year, waiting to go Jeremy Kendall again, but happy to go.
Let's go that one, Import of the Year.
Well, who do you reckon? I reckon that's John Mooney, but just narrowly from you know who.
Yeah, I think it's Mooney too. The missed time, guys, 10% of the season, that matters to me. It's a season award. Cotton missed games. Sorry, can't do it.
Yeah. Yep,
same reason you didn't win NBA 19.
You're MVP, but you're not the best import. Figure that one out, but you know.
Yeah. It's about production. I don't know what to tell you because if there's this ephemeral, best and fairest value. It's very kind of how you define it, whereas import production, Mooney.
I tell you what, if coming, you know, obviously being in Perth here, John Mooney is beloved already in Perth. He has sort of broken through in a way that imports over the last few years have not, apart from Bryce Cotton. There's been a bit of a revolving door of forwards coming through Perth. Nobody has grabbed people's imagination like John Mooney.
I don't want to go through NBL first and second team, but I just want to kind of ask the question of both of you. Is Ty Webster going to be in one of those teams? Maybe second team?
I don't think he should be. I think he's ball dominant.
Let me just try and work a team out here. I'm going to go Cotton, Sobey, Landale. Who else we got in the first team? Help me.
The third MVP, Mooney, and then Harvey.
All right, there's your first team. So your second team, your next best. Well, okay. Does Josh Giddey get in the next one if he's going to be Rookie of the Year? Does he get an MBL too?
No.
Come on.
I'm just putting the question out there.
I'm saying Casper Ware's that spot for me. I thought he had a good year. What do you think about Casper Ware, Body?
I thought he took a lot of bad shots at the end of the games, trying to be a little bit too much of the hero ball instead of creating something better.
But yeah, that team was hurt and average, and I thought he carried that team. I really did.
Yeah, look, I'm not bagging Casper. I think he's a really good player. I also think he's 31, and you know he fell over a few more times than he used to.
Ooh,
yeah. Okay. I'd put Kiefer Sykes ahead of Casper.
He missed too much time, Andrew Kenyon.
Okay.
Oh, come on. Is that going to be your argument all night? Jeez.
He missed too much time. Like 12 games or something. He missed the last season.
Okay, so you're going to eliminate Cam Oliver on the same basis?
Exactly. You're damn right. And also, are you guys putting Dane Pinot on this team? Or?
No, he didn't play that well. But Jeremy Kendall did.
If I hear Jeremy Kendall one more time, I'm going to scream.
Okay.
So now you're telling Hodgson, me Cam Oliver. Sorry. He can make the NBA, but he can't make an NBL second
team. How much time did he miss? He missed half. It's a regular season award. He missed half of it. I can't have it.
Wait a minute, Andrew. On what you just said, that makes Magne the backup center in the NBL.
All right. We'll
start team two.
All right, let's move on from the awards. We've reached our tether, the end of our tether here. Each series, who wins and why? I'm going to start with Andrew Kenyon. Which let's give you the Perth series. Perth, Illawarra, we're going 2-3 in Perth. I think it starts, Thursday?
Thursday night.
Yes.
Yep.
Who wins that series in how many games and why?
Okay, Perth win it in two. I think it's if you stop Harvey, you stop the Hawks. You've got a Wildcats squad who been there, done that. Semi-finals is seen as like a step to the actual event. You just got to work through it. Up against a Hawks team full of young people who will be excited about the thrill of the finals, you know, bought into the narrative of, wow, we've made it, we're really here. And they'll just get run over. They'll get hit by a machine, you know, that is just grinding through. It'll be dour, you know, without Bryce Cotton. It's not going to be one on from an offensive perspective. It's going to be about the cranking up of the playoff defense, and Perth will take it away.
Body, what do you think of that? And do you have anything to add?
I tend to agree with everything you just said in relation to game one. But I think going back to Wollongong, they will the Hawks would have been slapped around and realised, oh, hang on, you know, it's not enough just to arrive here. We actually have to do some damage. And Gorge has been around a long time. I think they can get game two. I think they can play with a sort of emotion in front of that Hawks crowd that got them into the playoffs in the first place when they beat Perth last week. I think they can force it to three games, but I don't think they will beat Perth at all because of the ruthlessness and the been there, done that nature of that Wildcats group. I know you can say, oh, well, Blanchfield hasn't, Mooney hasn't, doesn't matter. They're part of that new culture. They're bought into it and there's enough in that core. You know, Jesse Wagstaff, he'll run on if he doesn't sort of fall over if he runs past an opponent. They will win the series, but I think it can go three.
I agree. I think the Hawks just won't win in Perth. I don't know what's going to happen in Wollongong. That's the only debate for me, but they're not going to win in Perth. They cannot win in Perth. Not going to happen. Happy to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Melbourne and Southeast Melbourne. I'm going to start with you, buddy. This one's being played in Sydney, but close to the fans. Before we talk about the series, what do you think about that decision? Do you think it's a little bit too cautious? Do you think it's odd? What do you think?
I think they made a mistake in going to Sydney. And in all seriousness, I think they should have come to Adelaide. And I think they should have played the series in Adelaide because if they had not go to the Adelaide Entertainment Centre, but go to the old Clipswell Powerhouse or the Titanium Security Arena or whatever stupid name it's got currently.
It's called the old church now, isn't it?
No, it's called...
We're cancelled now. It's over.
36ers Stadium now, I believe it's called. Okay. But if they had gone there, bear in mind, Mitch Creek is a former 36ers captain, got his own following in Adelaide. Adam Gibson is a former 36ers captain. Kyle Adnam was a DP with the 36ers. There's a connection to Adelaide for that Phoenix club. So if they had come, even if they only played the second game here, I think they'd have got a crowd. I think they would have got 4,000, close to 4,000, which would probably be double what they would have got in Melbourne even, because, I mean, the Southeast Melbourne were pulling 1,800, you know. Mm. So I think they made a mistake in going to Sydney. And then to sort of say, well, no crowd, well, I just think that's an overreaction in the extreme. That you don't know if the Sydney fans might have gone out. I don't even understand why there's no crowd. Is there an explanation for that?
They're just saying, we're just going to take every precaution is what I got from the meeting. But I always read between the lines. I think maybe there's a different cost to hiring the venue if you say, hang on, we don't need the event staff. We're just doing it for the thing. That's me being very skeptical, very sort of whatever else. I'm like, no. You would have it at a crowd if you thought you could get money off it. No, there's
some I think you're absolutely right. Follow the money.
The wire. Yeah, exactly.
Is Cam Glidden playing in this?
No, I don't think he would be. Andrew, have you read anything or heard anything?
I haven't heard. I presume that he would be because he left for his it was the birth of his child, wasn't it? Back in Melbourne. So
the team was in Cairns. I don't think he's
playing. Yeah.
So you think does that move the needle for anyone?
Yeah. Is that quarantine? Is that what it would be, that he has to go for 2 weeks quarantine so he can't get back to him? Is that what we're thinking?
Okay. He's just locked in. He can't leave the state. Can't leave.
It does move the needle because you don't. You know what you're going to get from him: a sensational performance followed by a rubbish performance. So they might have been, if you could have got that in the right order, they might have got the second game.
Good point. So
now, normally I'd say they'd be okay because they've got Ryan Brokoff to step up into that position.
Oh my God. He's a bust. He's a bust.
You loved him.
I know. I loved him as an NBA player. I loved him when I first saw him playing for the Boomers in Europe. Hadn't seen him before. He was making shots from the corner. He was getting rebounds. He was just such a smart player. I love this guy. Felt the same when I watched him through internationals. I don't know, it was a World Cup or the Olympics. Loved him. Comes back from Dallas. You know, he just about can't play. I'm shocked. I have no explanation for that whatsoever.
Do you think it's something to do with injury? He's had a kid, life's just piling up on him. It's like, oh, I'm here in the NBL for a short time, not a long time. Do you think it's that issue? Or is there something structurally wrong with his game?
I don't think you can just sort of say, well, I'm going to ride off playing in the NBL because I want to go somewhere else later, because people will look at his performances in the NBL and maybe the offers won't be too
especially thick
on the ground. Yeah, so, I mean, I wouldn't put him in the Boomers right now, but if he hadn't played for the Phoenix and my last impressions of him are from running around in the NBA, I would have said, oh, this guy's got to be in the Olympic team. Mm. Now I'm thinking, no, I wouldn't put him in right now.
Who wins the series?
Yeah, boss?
Oh, sorry, Andrew, you go.
I was just going to say, I just wanted to say I agree. Like, I was so excited for him to be coming to the league. Mm. All the same things that Buddy just said, loved watching him play. And he's just a nothing. Dumb. He's just he's just invisible.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's sort of like, well, what is it? Is it this injury on top of that injury? Or as you might have just said, Joseph, that maybe just life's caught up, having a child, a different perspective.
Yeah, or Adam's cannibalizing things a little bit. There's a lot of play. I'm excited to see him. This is his chance now. All can be forgiven if he plays well in this. But more important, Boddy, who wins and in how many games?
United wins in two, unless Cam Glidden plays and gets the order correct. You know, like if he plays a shocker in the first game and great in the second game, then they can force it three. But generally speaking, no Cam Glidden over in two. I have no faith in the Phoenix at the minute. The way they performed against Brisbane was pathetic.
Yeah.
And sad, actually. Just a bit sad to watch the way they were playing. I was like, oh, you're kidding, aren't you?
I want to go to Andrew Kenyon. Oh, no, sorry, buddy, you gone?
No, just I was sitting there with tissues.
It was sad. You put it best. It was very, very sad. Yeah. Andrew, who you got in this series? How long and why?
Okay, so I've got United in three. I think Phoenix, if they play to their potential, they could create an upset. But I don't think they have
don't
the internal fortitude.
They don't
have the internal fortitude to keep it up for any length of time. So they might get it for one, but then they'll just turn to water again. They need Mitch Creek to recapture that early season form that he had where he was looking like an MVP candidate.
I've got a joke here. I'm not going to do it, buddy. I'm not going to do it. Go on. Sorry, Ed.
Oh, well, thanks for letting us know.
You're welcome.
We're thrilled.
Sorry, Look, Andrew.
I'm going to say, Andrew, Mitch Creek, last couple of games, has been playing like the old Mitch Creek. Like, he went through his slump when he had to deal with his off-court issues. Then he was exonerated, and it still took him a while to sort of get back to who he was. And then he started to play well. He had a monster game in one of these ones against Brisbane. But nobody went with him. And when they beat New Zealand, Kiefer Sykes played great, but very few went with him. I just don't think they're all on the same page at the moment. I think the Kyle Adnam emergence during Kiefer's absence, the Liafa became a presence. Now he doesn't know where he fits anymore. It's just I just don't think they've got it right at the minute. They had it right early in the season. They were going traveling quite nicely, and you thought, okay, we've got Pinot and Gibson are coming. They're going to be good. And then Brokoff happens, and we're like very excited about their potential. But this is going to be potential unrequited because they're not on the same page.
I want to ask this question.
I like that. Potential unrequited. That was very good.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Sorry, Joe.
I've got my Dennis Committee list of things I must say.
Andrew, what were we going to say?
I just think the forward line of United are just going to end up. They're going to have their way with this Phoenix team. Yeah. Phoenix got a whole bunch of like 6'6" kind of outside guards. Small forwards, they're just going to get destroyed, monstered inside.
Exactly. My thought is this as well. You look at any game South East Melbourne have played, always bet the over on the points and rebounds of the bigs. Mooney destroyed this team. Hodgson had big games. Every team killed. And they're going up against a big who we were talking about as a MVP and Landau. I think Landau's going to absolutely smack this series. And that guy, when he's on, he is so clinical. He doesn't miss. And South East Melbourne make too many mistakes. And Landau's just going to go whack from mid-range and kill this team. I'm with Boddy. I think it's two and it's done. I don't trust the Phoenix. And I want to ask you two both this question. Simon Mitchell got re-upped mid-season. Let's go to you first, Boddy. Why would they have done that? Is he the guy in your eyes? Were you surprised to see that? What do you think?
I thought now in hindsight that it was a bit similar to what happened last season when the Breakers were struggling and suddenly ownership turns up and says, Dan Shamir, we're appointing him for the next 2-3 years, whatever it was. And suddenly everyone was like, oh, okay, they're going with the coach, so it's no use us bitching a moaning. Let's get on board. And then the Breakers finished with a bit of a rush last season. I feel sorry for them, but that's a separate story we can get to later. So I'm wondering if it wasn't the same strategy here with South East Melbourne Phoenix saying, okay, we're happy with what Simon's done up to now because, you know, like 2 years ago, this team was just an idea. It was just notes on a piece of paper, didn't have a basketball or anything. So what he's had to do in a short space of time has been pretty good. And I wouldn't put all the blame at his feet for their current situation, but I do think that they have lost their way in terms of understanding their roles and how they all fit and where they all contribute. When they were sort of on task and sort of getting that right, then definitely they looked like the only team that could genuinely threaten Perth or Melbourne at full strength. But I don't see that now. But I don't see that completely as Mitchell's fault. Like, hey, you know, he didn't get it right. I think we're pretty quick to point the finger at the coach because it's much easier to get rid of one bloke than get rid of 12. But No, I think it was probably a good move in terms of the strategy of let's show the team that we're behind Simon, and so that they get behind Simon. Whether that's worked or not, time will tell. But, yeah, Andrew, do you want to rethink three games against United?
No, I'm sticking with it because, you know.
All right, fine.
I'm backing that's myself in here.
And I'm with Andrew. I'm with Andrew. They can go three if Kiefer Sykes has a good game. But, man, he's coming up against McCarron and Illy. It's a tough ask, yeah, even for him. Yeah.
No, and Barber, they don't give you much.
They don't give you a haircut.
No.
Jesus. Okay. While we're on South East Melbourne, the NBL
Cup. That took a little bit longer for me.
The NBL Cup in retrospect. So it's pushed the season longer. Now this game has been played in Sydney with no crowds, which and may continue if United or South East Melbourne go further, could affect them, you know, furthermore in the finals or, you know, whatever. Looking back on the cup, failure, success. Let's start with you, Andrew Canyon.
Look, it's hard to argue against more basketball, but I do think it's caused the season to drag out way too long.
And injuries. Sorry to interrupt, but how many injuries have we seen? Do we think that's a coincidence? Sorry, go on.
No, and I think I don't blame them for having done it because at the time they had no, they were planning the season week by week. They didn't know what was going on. Nobody knew. And so I think fair play. And there was money coming in from the state government as well. So again, follow the money. So I think it's all well and good. So I'm willing to give them a pass on this season. Yeah. Would you do it again next year? I don't think so. I think it doesn't make sense as like an in-season tournament within itself. So I think, it was served its purpose and let's say goodbye to it.
I want to ask this question to Boddy. Without the NBL Cup and it being in Melbourne, that was an advantage for South East Melbourne. They finished second in the Cup or third. I can't remember. They won a lot of games there. Without the NBL Cup, does South East Melbourne make fourth spot?
Yeah, I think so, because if you look back at the first few rounds, they had Perth early in the piece twice. They had Melbourne early in the piece twice. So they had already played the two leading contenders before we ever got to NBL Cup. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they split those games. So I think they were showing that we're going to be the only team that can really challenge, as we were talking about earlier, that was at that point where they sort of knew where they were and where they were going, what their roles were, and then Sykes gets hurt, then Krieg has his issues, and then we go in that direction. So with the NBL Cup, I thought they used to go. It was a 28, I think it was 28 game regular season up until the season. Why we've gone to 36, drag this season on, and a COVID situation where you never know what's going to happen. So let's tighten it up. If you want to go a little bit longer, then go 32 games, because then at least you've played your eight opponents four times. Nobody's disadvantaged. No one's advantaged. And if you want to go longer, there it is, 32. That was it. To go 36, to keep going, to have that NBL Cup and us have basketball overload, which is really what it was when it's on every night. You know, there were days I just couldn't be bothered. Like, who's playing today? It's like, oh, I can't be bothered worrying about it. So I think I understand why they did it, so they could get a big, bank of games done in case COVID hit. But why are we playing a 36-game regulation, 36-game regular season? Why are we still going at a time when AFL and NRL are taken over completely? I think it was a huge miscalculation, to be honest.
I want to ask you this, Boddy, because you've covered the league for a long time, and when it was in winter and it was in summer and both, I just found this season was such a wash in winter. I remember being at my work and I've got a wall of TV screens, and it'd be like NRL, AFL, something else, Formula One, da-da-da, everything else, and NBL just wouldn't even make the cut of eight screens. You've covered it in the winter and before. If it did stand out when it was in the winter in the competition, and did it fail this time? And if so, why? That was my question for you, Boddy.
I think it failed in winter because it got a bit big for its boots at a time when it shouldn't have. If you can go back that far, I don't know if you guys are old enough, but if you can go back that far, AFL football was played at 2:00 or 2:20 on a Saturday afternoon. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what it was played. That's when the footy was on.
Multiple games at one time.
Yeah, absolutely. At all the grounds, Collingwood Ground, Victoria Park, and Hawthorn and Richmond, all that, Punt Road, that's what was going on. And at that time, I think Mal Speed was the chairman of the NBL, and he made this outlandish statement that we'll be like a number one sport by the time we hit the 1990s. And football, great sleeping giant, you know, not really too concerned about this little pissant basketball game, suddenly goes, what was that? What did they say? And suddenly they're playing on a Friday night. They're playing on Saturday lunchtime. They're playing twilight. They're playing night. They're playing Sunday. They're playing in all the spots where the NBL was playing. It's almost like giving the NBL a real big whack across the head, saying, just stay in your lane. And it was like, geez, we're in trouble. A bit like what you're seeing now in terms of the lack of crowds at games in Victoria. In particular, I mean, we're still getting crowds elsewhere, but that's what hit. And so it was like, if we moved to summer, at that stage, soccer wasn't all that popular. It was looked at very much as a ethnic-based sport. So if you were from Europe or South America or yeah, maybe you were following
that book,
soccer.
The title of that book, I actually don't remember it, but it's, you know, what you're saying. Sorry, buddy, go on.
Yeah, I think the book is called Don't Call It Soccer, It's Football. I think that was the name of that book. But I'm never going to call it football until our national team is called the Footballaroos. All right, moving right along. So we also had an announcement made that the kids in Australia, their number one sporting fan was Michael Jordan. And I was like, what? Mm. This is early 90s. Mm. But people are shocked. And so it's like there was a real backlash against basketball. It should have been Alan Border, who was the test cricket captain at that time, or it should be this bloke, or it should be that. But how can it be some American basketball? So there was a real backlash against basketball. And moving to summer seemed like an escape. As I said, soccer wasn't at that time then to be that popular. Test cricket was played here 1 year, away 1 year. So it wasn't going to cause too much distress. It seemed like a good idea at the time. And then there was some sort of commitment, supposedly, and that's in air quotes, commitment from Channel 7, that if we went to summer as a sport that they would back it. Although that was never in writing, and obviously therefore wasn't worth the paper it wasn't written on, and they just, the NBL jumped to summer with no commitment from anyone, and when they turned to 7, 7 said, well, you know, we're not that interested. And so, yeah, that was sort of an escape.
That was 30 years ago.
And what have we gained in that time? We still don't have – we're not – you know, no one's paying for the rights to basketball. Basketball's still paying to be on TV.
That's where we're going to jump. Just before we jump to that, the new deal with Channel 10, the A-League, I wanted to ask this question, and Andrew, jump in where you can. The crowds, like, I know there's competition, but gee, some of these crowds in Melbourne, you know, 1,200 people, 1,400 people in Brisbane. Like, are you surprised, buddy, by how few people have turned out? Do you put it down to fatigue, or is there something else going on?
No, I just put it down to the fact that there's too much basketball, and now people only have a certain amount of money to spend on their social entertainment, and you know, there's lots of things to go to, and you know, we're playing at a bad time of the year. We shouldn't be playing in June. What are we doing playing in June? You know, that's suicidal.
The coverage, like, sorry to interrupt you, buddy, but the coverage hasn't been there because all the other guys, like, for example, Dwayne Russell, think of him what you want as a commentator, but it's clear that once it was AFL, he's off. Oh, I'm doing AFL now. And that's he's the thing in microcosm. He's the thing because he's off and gone. The fringe writers who are like, oh, you know, it's summer. Okay, I've done the BBL. I've done a bit of cricket. What else can I write on? Okay, a bit of basketball. But the volume it's just dropped so much. And even that little trickle of stuff I got in the papers, I've found, has been gutted. And as a result, just your average punter picking up a paper hasn't seen it. And it has disappeared off the map. What do you think, Andrew? Because you're in Perth where the crowds are still good. How? Why? What's happened?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Because, I mean, we don't have as many footy teams, but Perth is definitely an AFL town. We've got the two of them, and they still sell out their stadiums pretty well. I think the Wildcats just have a special place in this city. They've just been such a dominant force for so long. There's a level of indoctrination in it, I think. The kids are brought up with it, you know, through the school visits and all that kind of thing. They're really seen as a genuine part of the community. So people still get behind it. The WA economy is doing okay. So there's still enough money for people to spend, I guess, to go to games. Although I even question how they managed to do it because the ticket prices are astronomical.
Yeah, that's the other ticket price.
Well, you know, the other thing I want to say, and sorry to cut you off, Andrew, is, man, I've been to Perth and back a few times in the last couple of weeks and months. They have a genuine understanding and commitment with Channel 10. the Wildcats make the 10 o'clock news, and it's Gleason on a press conference. It's this, it's yeah. that. It's Lockie Reed doing some screwball thing with the team. Yeah. I love Lockie Reed. It's a genuine give and take with that network in Perth. And I certainly doesn't, it does not happen here in Sydney. I've never seen the Kings on the only time I've seen basketball on news over here is when Gorgon signed with Illawarra on the ABC Breakfast News. If they yeah. don't have that commitment. And I think there's a small part to be played with Channel 10. And speaking of Channel 10, Channel 10 and the A-League have signed this new deal, $200 million over 5 years. I mean, and I have this question. I'm going to put it to Boddy first. $200 million over 5 years. The NBL, is this a body blow for the NBL or a death roll, a death rattle? Because they would look at that money and that genuine commitment from 10 and go, uh-oh, there are only three commercial networks and now one of them for summer is off the table. A third of your options are gone. I would have thought they'd be looking at that and pulling their hair out and really sore with themselves. What do you think, buddy?
Yeah, I think that's a. I don't know about death roll or even a death warrant, whatever it is.
It means it's half a decade you're not on commercial TV, doesn't
yeah.
it?
That's yeah, yeah. But
it's
you know,
a jagged pill.
It is not a positive by any stretch of the imagination for anyone who loves basketball. But yeah, look. When was the last time basketball had a really good television deal? Yeah. I think the answer is never.
Why do you suppose? Why have Channel 10 gone, basketball, yeah, pretty international, couple of teams on the verge. No, we're going to go with the A-League. What is it about? Yeah. Because the A-League's not exactly lighting the world on fire, but I'll ask the question. I'll let you answer. Sorry, buddy.
Well, you know, sometimes it's as simple, and I know this is going to sound really simplistic, but sometimes it's as simple as somebody of significance in the network liking a particular sport more than they like another one. If you look at the history of golf coverage, it's because there are a lot of people in networks who liked golf. I mean, does the average person want to watch golf?
I know I don't. I can't speak for Andrew. Do you like watching golf?
No.
All right. But yet we get a lot, there's a lot of golf on television, isn't there? So it's because sometimes it's as simple as that there's nobody in there pushing your barrow or saying this is a sport we should take a chance on. It can be as simple as that. I know that sounds very simplistic, but it can be as simple as that. I don't know that that is the case because we've been, as a sport, butting our head up against a brick wall for 40 years, you know, more than 40 years.
I sort of wonder if the NBL, I feel like they had the right idea. They sort of saw the online world as the one in which they could claim, and they started up this Twitch stream and sort of encouraged that. Mm. I feel like they almost half-assed it. I think they're trying to do that, but they're also trying to be on the networks. And I'm wondering if they need to just resolve that situation and maybe look at where's your audience and who's your target demographic and all that. And it's the type of people that will get the NBA all access pass and watch it on their, you know, their Apple TV. Is there a way that you can put together a absolutely premium service online offering? And now whether you partner that with a KO or something, I don't know, or whether you go it alone, but really just buy into that. We're the online streaming sport. Forget the networks.
My worry,
Joseph, you can answer that. Yeah,
well, yeah, here would be my worry with that. That gets you an active audience, right? People who know what basketball is, people who like the NBL will go and subscribe to that service. It won't get you a passive audience, an audience that's just watched the 7 o'clock news and are like, well, should I watch MasterChef or should I watch this basketball? Who's this Adelaide 36ers and who are these Sydney Kings? You know, it doesn't get you that audience, which at this point for basketball would be the most amount of society. You know, Australia's got a population of what, 20 some million or something. The NBL has 60,000 followers on Twitter. So most people, the NBL lives in obscurity. So yes, it helps you get that active audience, but how do you get a passive one? You need to be thrusted. You need to be helped. And I just worry that does the NBL have people that, you know, networks enjoy doing business with? You know, would you enjoy having Paul Smith and Andrew Bogut talking shit about you on Twitter? Would that be something you'd pay $200 million over 5 years to enjoy? I would say categorically, not particularly. So
hard to argue.
What are we going to move on to? We're getting
but
over
have, the NBL. They haven't got a TV deal, but they have got a new comfort pillow sponsor.
Did you see this, buddy?
No.
Okay.
No, I did not.
Andrew, you tell it.
Okay, so they've announced that they've partnered with the fastest growing home comfort
little cushions,
provider.
Right?
Cushions, right?
It is okay. What now? Could use one now for my back.
Now, I was alerted to this through Twitter. I can't remember who did it, but I don't take credit for it. But was it Nick Tad? Of course it was Nick Tad.
He is a muckraker of muckrakers. But sorry, what I'm a legend. Go on, Andrew.
So it turns out that the homie pillow that is now sponsoring the league, sure it'll be helpful on flights, is a Justin Kesselman brand.
So
I guess it's the Phoenix arising from the first ever Phoenix has risen again in the form of pillows. So fantastic. Look, they've got that deal closed. So
well, they had all that fabric they had to do something with.
All right. I tell you what, they are great cushions. If you've got a hemorrhoid and you're on a long haul flight. This is horrible. We're going to have to cut this. I've got a little, quickly for you two, who are they? Little quiz for you. Like, oh, who could it be? And if my Word document will open, I'll gladly read it out to you. Here it is. Who am I? 8 points, 6 points, 12 points, 5 points, 17 points in my last five games. Who am I? 8, 6, 12, 5, 17 points in my last five. Who am I? Andrew Kent.
Goodness. Ruben Tarangi.
Close. Body, okay. Guess.
Oh, this is his last five games. Last five games played, not Jeremy Kendall's last five games.
Cam Glidden. Just bit up and down. Here's a way. This is my last little who am I.
That's my next guess.
I'm 47th in minutes per game, but 97th of 100 in PER. Who am I? Player efficiency rating. Andrew, someone who gets minutes, but maybe doesn't have the production to back it up.
Cam Glidden?
No, not Cam Glidden. Buddy, you got an answer for him?
I'm going with Jesse Wagstaff because, you know, I just love that man.
It's Ruben Tarangi.
That's a trick question.
I want to ask you these questions. Who do we see is either one of these two guys coming back to the NBL? Lamar Patterson or Brad Newley? Let's go to Andrew first. Lamar Patterson, is he coming back to the NBL?
No, he's not. He's done. Lamanis was his ally, and he's gone, so he's gone. Who's the other one, sorry?
Brad Newley. His numbers towards the end. He's still got something in transition, but I don't know.
Bring him back. Why not? The next season kicks off in 3 months' time, so what the hell? Just keep him running.
Body, Lamar Patterson first.
Lamar Patterson,
You made a lot of jokes if it expense, buddy. A lot of jokes.
Oh, come on. Don't be like that. You're making a meal out of the whole thing. the fact is Lamar doesn't come in good shape. So, no one's going to gamble on him. I don't think so. I think he's done. I think his NBL career is over. Brad Newley, I'd be prepared to go 1 year with Brad as in a role coming off the bench, which I think he would embrace that too. I don't think his ego is that massive that he doesn't recognize that he's at the tail end, not at the beginning. So I think you'd get good value out of Brad Newley. Plus, I know him personally, and he's a decent person who I think really would respond to that role. Hey, did you see Andre Lemanis's parting words?
I didn't. What did he say?
No.
Oh, you didn't? Well,
this press conference was on my to-watch list. Apparently, you kind of said a bunch of things. But, yeah, go on, buddy.
Oh, he said it's an uneven playing field that clubs like Cairns and Illawarra, and even he's naming Brisbane, can't compete on the same financial level as a Melbourne United or a Perth Wildcats. And it's unrealistic for their fan bases to believe that they're competing on a level playing field. It was some really decent stuff. It's had quite the reaction too on social media.
I've seen the reaction and I've seen that paraphrase, but I haven't watched his exact words.
Yeah, well, one of the things they said was, you know, he's a fine one to comment. But, I mean, one of the things he said was, how is it that a club can have its roster done and then yet midway or late in the season bring in a guy from the NBA a la Brokoff at the Phoenix or Magne at Perth? You know, how are they able to do that? You know, which might be slightly disingenuous given that they picked up Lamar Patterson halfway through the season. How do they do that? But he made a lot
Didn't
of
they
valid...
also pick up another NBA guy? Didn't Magne come? Oh, no, actually, I'm sorry. Never mind.
All right, let's just forget that happened. okay. So his comments were really interesting. I mean, there was some saying, oh, you know, sour grapes and all that sort of stuff. But I think he's made a lot of valid points going forward. You know, when you talk about how does the A-League get this sort of money for its coverage, and I mean, different competitions are seen as being, I'm trying to think of the right word to use here. Like, people look at this from the outside and go, okay, we've got a sporting league here where the owner owns one of the clubs and has an interest in several other clubs. How does that operate? And that's a really good question. It's a really good question. How does that operate? You know, can a Larry Kesselman be as happy to see Illawarra Hawks win the championship as he would be to see Melbourne United to win the championship?
Very true.
You know, so
To me, I think.
Yeah, go, Andrew.
I was going to say, to me, yeah, that comes down to good governance. And I would say the AFL and maybe the soccer, which I don't pay that much attention to, but it seems like it's a competition in it's sort of like a neutral thing. And then it has clubs, teams that participate in it. Even I'm sure they're all making money, but that's the mental construct. I feel with the NBL entity feels like a business in its own right. And then it has other sort of club/businesses feeding into that. Yeah. It doesn't seem to have that independence at that league level that the other competitions have.
And I agree with that. And the other thing is with the A-League is they're going to talk about doing relegation. So they've got sub-tier teams that are ready to maybe step into the A-League, or at least think they can. Basketball doesn't have that. It's terribly fragmented from the league, as you say, Andrew, from the league to the teams within each other, and then to the lower level. It's a total lolly scramble. Andrew, I like the way you put that. Let's jump on. Let's do our last of this. Let's get out of here. Let's cast our eye over the dead. Let's start with Andrew. You pick a team. New Zealand, Brisbane, or Sydney? Which team do you want to pull apart with Boddy and I?
What about Adelaide?
Let's do Adelaide quickly. We've done Adelaide, so we won't comment. But Boddy, what do you think? My big question to you would be, how cynical did you find this season where they were just funneling stats and minutes through Giddy, if I could put it like that? That's what
I think the same thing, a very similar situation happened in Adelaide as occurred last year with the Hawks, where LaMelo Ball was the story, not that club, not how they were doing, not, and it was just about one person. And I think there was a lot of that in Adelaide worrying about Josh Giddy. I've got to say, in Josh's defense, he never did that. His priority was to try and win games, and I have full credit to him. I hope he has every success in his future endeavors. But I think the club erred in just focusing on him so much. And the fact of the matter is when you announce that you've signed a Josh Giddy, you've signed an Isaac Humphries, you've signed this bloke and that bloke, and then you announce, oh, by the way, we've signed a coach. His name is Henry Connor. It's Connor Henry. Henry O'Connor is our new coach, and he's going to take over this team that we've already picked. So, whole situation was fraught with peril, and I'm not surprised at all at how it turned out, and very disappointing, and I don't really hold a lot of great confidence in what's going to come from here going forward.
Yeah. Well, and also Madronia played 2 minutes in their last game. I'm like, is this kid?
He's signed. He's got a contract. He's contracted. Yeah. So get him on the floor. Why? You're losing games. You're finished. Why not play the guys that are going to play for you instead of the mercenaries who are just running around waiting to pick up their paycheck and get the hell out of town?
I think.
Come on, buddy. He got a start. He got a start in Perth, Madronia. So,
Yeah,
how does this happen?
He gets the guy goes from no court time to starting in Perth in front of the crowd in the jungle. First chance to get him get back there, like this 10,000 madmen yelling out at this poor kid. You know how he was running around with his pants full, Lord knows. And then the next game, he's back to 2 minutes. It's like, Connor, do you know what you're doing?
And we all know the answer to that one.
They just
seem like a hollowed out. It just seems like what Adelaide used to be. You were very clear on what Adelaide were as a team. Now they just seem to have no spirit, no like identity.
Yep.
They're just a uniform running around on a court.
Quickly here. In Giddy's defense, they were so much worse without him. Like, as much as I totally think they funneled minutes and stats from him, their end of the season was just the most limp, pathetic excuse to the end of the season I've seen from any team this year, I think. You know, Cairns had some fight in the end. Adelaide were atrocious when the moment Giddy covered the draft. Yeah. You were going to say something, buddy?
No, only it was funny because when Josh did pull out and say, okay, we're not going to make the final, so I'm not going to, you know, take any more chances with my health and whatever. And then the very next game that he's missing the intro is, yeah, they've still got a chance to make the playoffs. I'm thinking, oh, you're kidding, aren't you? The guy's already quit. You know, like everyone's out. What are you saying? Anyway, yeah, it's a bit it's a bit like Brisbane having to win by 82 points for Sydney to make the playoffs. You know, Brad and I were talking about, oh, it's a sure thing.
I want to jump over. Let's cast an eye over the Breakers, right? They're out. They had a weird year. Let's pick the bones of this. I didn't like their roster from the beginning. I don't like big seven-footers who are slow in the NBL. No other team has a slow big that does well. Patterson derailed their season. You debate it whichever way you want. They had a certain plan with him and he came in out of shape. It wasn't it for me. I'll start with you, Andrew. Like their season, the good, the bad, the ugly, and where do they go from here? What do you do?
Okay, well, very first of all, I'll say go to the NBL site, look at the Breakers page. It's quite funny because they have a picture of Lamar Patterson as a player for the Breakers wearing his Bullets uniform, so that's well done. Right, I think they're a team that had a lot of players who are the same. You had Ty and Corey Webster, who both love to squeeze the pumpkin and dribble it around before they shoot the ball. And then you had a bunch of small forward, power forwards, Randolph, Abercrombie, Finn Delaney, all kind of bringing the same thing to the team, anchored by a big white guy. It didn't really make a lot of sense, their team construction, to me. So I never really understood what they were trying to do. On the bright side, it seemed like they never had their full roster with them, so it kind of didn't play out the way we might have thought. They just are a team that are patchy and they're fun in patches, but they're wildly unpredictable. And I think you kind of need to scrap it and start all over again. I don't know contract situations. I don't know who's got time to go. But I think it's almost at a rebuild stage. I think if you're thinking you're going to win a championship with the two Websters, you're fooling yourself. I love them as like ambassadors for Kiwi basketball,
totally.
But I don't think they're going to win you championship. Levi Randolph, I think he's been fantastic. I'd keep him, bring him back, and maybe try and have him as just the player you build around. Yeah. He and Delaney, and just go from there.
I'm going to jump in here. I like Ty Webster, and I thought he looked a measurably better player when he was like in a Nathan Sobey role when McDowell White joined the team. I thought he was let to just catch it and rip and go. He's a scorer. He's not going to set up anyone. Ball's going to stop his hands a little bit, but sometimes it's nice knowing that on your team, if we throw that guy the ball, he's going to make something happen, and we either get a rebound or he's going to kick it out. You know, you just know where you stand with Ty Webster. The one I didn't enjoy was Corey Webster. I'm looking at him now. I've got his stats here. He's what, 32, turning 33. Some of the, you know, his last game, 1 of 6 in 13 minutes. He was 16 points, 13. Never particularly high percentages. Always in the sort of, I had a couple of dizzy, but point tallies weren't there. I think Ty's the one you go with. Obviously, he's younger. I like Ty. I didn't like Corey Webster this year. And this is now two bad years for Corey Webster back-to-back in losing seasons in the NBL. I'm out on him. What do you think, buddy?
I think you two are exceptionally cruel men.
And what do you think of the Breakers?
We've made a name for that, so why would we stop?
Well, it's just you've not given anything towards what they actually had to go through. You know, that team had to go through a lot of adversity right from day one, and they had to deal with stuff that no one else had to deal with. They're a long way from their families. I think you're just being a fraction too harsh. But I do agree that if you're looking at a rebuild, then McDowell White, Ty Webster, Levi Strauss, and Finn Delaney is a good place to start. Now there's four. You get yourself a decent five man. Not that Colton Iverson wasn't decent, but I like him better as a Western gunslinger. Then you got Abercrombie, Rob Lowe, and you got that Galloway kid who can sure throw down a dunk. So you've got the makings of a group that could have real potential to do some damage over the next couple of years, especially if all things being equal, you don't have to have Rob Lowe has to head home because of family issues. You don't have to have guys that are really struggling with being away from home for this long. You know, they had to put up with a lot. And I still rate Abercrombie. I think he's an excellent defender. Is he up for best defensive? So I think that their roster, they had to deal with a lot of crazy stuff. I mean, Lamar Patterson, I mean, when he spent a lot of time insisting to Dan Shamir that they play a box and one. No one realized that it was a box of Krispy Kremes. But, you know, when they finally unloaded him, I think they picked up a good one in Levi. And last year they had to deal with Glenn Rice, crazy man. And this year they had to deal with just who's injured, who's in, who's out.
So you think their roster construction, let's say no one has to leave the team, all things considered, you think they would have made the four with the Iverson, the Patterson, and then both Websters shooting it every time? You think that would have worked?
If all things were normal and they could play their home games at home, and they worked out a bit faster that Patterson was not going to be the man they needed, and they brought in Randolph a lot sooner.
And played him unabridged. I think a McDowell,
yeah, I reckon
Ty
that would have
Webster,
been close.
Abercrombie, Delaney, another big who's kind of stretchy, and Randolph. I think that's a team that would have made it. I think Lamar Patterson, man, he is a guy who hovers around 4-5. He's not a guy who pushes you into the top two in the NBL. So, no, I see where you're tamed, buddy. I think we were a bit harsh, but I still kind of stand by the criticisms. But, yeah, their problems were exacerbated.
That's a good word.
Bye.
You know who I'd like to see on this team? I've got the import that they could bring in for next year.
Do it.
Sean Long.
Haven't they tried that? Yeah. I like Sean Long, but let's not. Let's move on. We're going a bit long here. Sydney Kings. They got rid of Adam Ford. They said you did a great job with injuries. You're still cut. There's something fishy going on there. I don't doubt it. Buddy, let's start with you. What did you think of that team? Pick the bones.
Did you catch the comment that he made to Andre Lemanis at the end of the game as they shook hands in the middle of the court?
About going back to...
Andre said, you know, something on the lines of, what are your plans? And he said, I'm going to go home to Perth home to Perth to my family. Words to that effect, I'm paraphrasing. Lamar Patterson came up and said, hey, have they still got that pizza bar open on Main Street in Perth? However, the reality is that... I've forgotten what we're talking about. Sydney. And Adam Ford. Right. Adam Ford. I'm not sure. I'm a bit – the jury's out a bit on Adam Ford. There were games where I thought he got outstanding performances from him. He through adversity, when they had guys missing, guys were injured, and things didn't go right. One thing – that was bad happened after another thing that was bad. You know, you're losing this player, losing that player. And I think he got him through all that. And then there were games where they should have performed better, where I could not follow his substitution pattern, or I just couldn't follow what he was doing. And I mean, maybe that's me. Maybe I'm just not up with the modern game, but I'm just not into that Will Weaver type substitution pattern where, you know, everyone's got to be in for a certain amount of time. We've got to have 10 guys in within the first 6 minutes. What are you doing? That's just BS to me.
Here's my question. Sorry, buddy, you're
gone. No, here's your question.
Question for you is, if you're Paul Smith and Andrew Bogut now at 10% across the table, and you've got Will Weaver who going, it didn't work out in Houston. You've got Adam Ford saying, I've reconsidered going back to Perth. Who would you hire, buddy Nodge?
I would hire Matt Nielsen in a heartbeat.
Andrew Kane, let's go to you. So Sydney Kings, they fell short. And they had terrible injuries, and Ford is gone. And I know Ford says I'm going back to Perth, but when he renounced his retirement, nothing was said on Twitter from the top echeloning the Kings. Were like, oh, Ford, you know, he's going home to his family. We're going to miss him. This is a fortunate. So it wasn't that kind of it wasn't an amicable ending.
No, it wasn't.
So I'm skeptical of that. He's
basically slipped out the back door.
I'm out. I don't want it.
You sort of wonder who was really pulling the strings on this team. Like, was it? I think they have quite a bit of input around physiotherapy sort of team, and what can be who restricted minutes and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
I think if you're wearing a uniform, you go. If you're not wearing, you know, otherwise you put on the tracksuit pants and cheer from the sides, and let the coach make those decisions. On the bright side, we saw some real development from Craig Moller. He can actually hit a 3-point shot now.
He's really good.
They had Vasiljevic. That's good. Xavier Cooks came back, and he was looking really quite sharp. Absolutely. So Jordan Hunter showed improvement. So I think there's pieces there that you can say, well, it wasn't a total write-off of a season. it was always going to be difficult because they really had to fall away from when they were championship contenders. So I think they, I don't really know if I'm answering a question at all. I don't really know. They're just kind of in this middling ground of like they did okay, but they're not anywhere near a championship at this level. So I don't know quite. And obviously without a coach, you can't build a culture and a way of playing without a coach. So they need to appoint one quickly. And Matt Nielsen would be an awesome appointment.
Do you think that's likely, Boddy? Sorry to interrupt. And do you think that's likely, Matt Nielsen?
Yeah, I think they're going to want to make a really, really grand announcement. They want somebody, you know, like, we've got Brett Brown or something. You know, they want to make they're not going to gamble on a rookie or anything of that nature. I'd be shocked if they did that. I think it's much more likely that they're going to try and bring in a name. And Matt, if you bring in an American cold, often it takes them a year just to sort of get acclimatized to our league and how it all works and our culture. But if you bring in a Matt Nielsen, you're on a winner. Really, you're on a winner.
I mean, he was beloved, wasn't he? Like back when he was a player, he was the toast of the town.
Can he coach, Boddy? Yeah. Is he good? I haven't seen him coach. Is he good?
Well, you know, Andrew might know because he was an assistant for a long time with Trevor Gleeson. Trevor speaks very highly of him. He's been in the San Antonio Spurs program. Okay. I think he's done his apprenticeship. I think he's done as much, if not more, than Mike Kelly had done before he had his first NBL head coaching appointment. So I would have no qualms about him taking over that role. I mean, I think Rob Beveridge would be a great option too, but I think because they turned away from him for Will Weaver, I think that bridge is kind of
burnt. Not sexy enough. Yeah. And I think, you were saying about
Nielsen would be. Nielsen would be. And then if you can retain Jarrell Martin, who I absolutely love that guy. I think he's terrific. I think he's what Lamar Patterson could be if he, you know, stayed out of the Sizzlers. Oh, they're gone now, so it's okay. That cheese toast, though, it's pretty hard to walk past it.
Paul Smith is like Smaug from The Hobbit. He has an insatiable appetite for former Boomers. He just has to. He has to have him. He doesn't want to do anything like Longley. He doesn't want to do anything with him. He just wants to have him. Just in the, the gold, it's mine. I can't spend it, but I'll have it. And he just loves these former Boomers. Look who he's got: Bogut, Longley, Lish, soon to be Nielsen. And here's the other coaching option we haven't thrown out: former Boomer, who's just a little tiptoe down the way in the women's team, Shane Heal. It's either Nielsen or Heal. I can feel it in my waters. I can just he'll step aside from the Flames to the Kings, and someone will step into that gap. I can.
Yeah, Shannon Seabone will bring him down. Shannon, come back. Do the women. Shiloh will score 30 a game for you, and I can be busy with the boys.
Yeah, I've got a
Shane can step in and be a player coach. He can.
I can feel it. I can feel it. Anyway, lads, I think we've come to the end. Unless anyone's got anything else to add.
So we did. We didn't do Brisbane.
Oh, you want to do? Yeah, sure. I forgot to do Brisbane.
that sums up Brisbane. Yeah, I forgot about them.
Yeah, a middling span.
Let's just forget about them. Yeah.
Like Adelaide Light. Bring back Vic Law. Bring back Vic Law.
If they'd had Vic Law healthy, they would have made the playoffs. Yep.
Totally.
Yep.
He was a winner.
He was the best import I think of the year. If you that body. If you ignore John Mooney.
Yeah, I agree. It was really good. I agree. New import, totally. Andrew, where do you see Brisbane? We kind of spoke about them before, how just blah they are. And their spend is average. I mean, I think Lamanis clogged a lot of holes. We make fun of him for being boring, but the spend wasn't there, you could tell, and he plugged a lot of holes. So I think they're a team that's set to go south.
I think, they're a team without a alpha personality. So Nathan Sobey is probably the alpha dog of the team, if you want to call it that. But he doesn't embody anything. You don't sort of know where you're at with them. So, and I think that reflects across the whole team. So you end up this whole kind of team of blur. You know, just kind of like, okay, well, Anthony Drimmick, you know, he might play a good game very occasionally.
He teased it, didn't he? I think
we know we've seen his ceiling now, and I would cut bait with him. You know, Kadee is still handy off the bench, but always just a bench guy. Frolling, forget about it. Like he and Lamar, geez, don't get in the way of the buffet when those two are around.
Yeah.
Sorry, body's rubbing off on me.
That last chicken leg. Don't dive on it.
Tell them a rebound is a chicken leg and they might actually both go for it.
That's the problem. And Miles was like, Harry, catch it, go to the bucket. And he's like, I already had a 24. This is all we're going to get in trouble for this, Andrew. We've had this. Anyway, sorry.
I think you guys are harsh in saying that Lemanis is boring. It's just that everyone else is more interesting. That's all.
What a way to put it. I think that sums up the Bulls. Gentlemen, I feel like we've run a good time. I think we've got everything else. Does anyone have anything, parting words, well wishes, happy birthdays? What do you want to do?
I just want to say, Jeremy Kendall, love your game.
Kendall had a place somewhere. I agree. That's all from me. Andrew, you got the final word. Take it.
Yeah, look, thanks for listening. It's been an absolute pleasure to have a three-man pod. How exciting. If you really enjoyed this, you know what to do. You need to rate, review, subscribe, obviously, and, of course, don't forget the Patreon site.
I'm Booktopia. Just before that, Booktopia. Link. We get 10%. Body's got a book in the works. It'll be available through Booktopia. A great place to... Am I speaking out of turn here, Body?
No. A Type of Life. It'll be coming out. A Type of Life. It's coming out in November. It's a memoir. It's about a migrant family coming to Australia and one of its characters, his life. Mm-hmm. Could be me. Maybe not.
And all those other couple of books that have come out. Chris Anstey's Tall Tales.
Loving it. I haven't quite finished it. I'll be doing a review of it before the end of the week, but it is really, really surprisingly good storytelling. And I don't mean that in an offensive way that I didn't. It's just that he's such a good storyteller. I really am enjoying reading it. And also Born in Black has come out. Hugh Bainan, talking about the New Zealand Tall Blacks, the Centurions, the guys that have played 100 tests or more for New Zealand. That again, is a very entertaining book. Yeah. Taught me a lot I didn't know, which I actually thought I had. Yeah. Did.
And those guys are listening. Chris Apple. If those guys are listening, this podcast does have somewhat of a reputation for selling books. So,
And one last, we got Chris Appleby on Twitter. He's Chris _Apples. He's got the Imported documentary. I've watched all the clips that he's been putting out on that. Got me so invested that I put my money where my mouth is, and I've signed up to give him some money should the project go ahead.
That's really good.
Yeah. Well, let's follow the money. And also, at the same time, there's a documentary with the same difficulties on Michael Armat, the first Indigenous Olympian, a great basketball player, great human being, love him like a brother. And it's a pretty good story. You can find the teaser on that around the place too. That's another one that's really worth investing in.
The other one with Body, who's next on Brad and Body? Guest wise.
I can't tell you, but in the next couple of weeks we will have guys whose names might rhyme with Utoff and Worthington.
Speaking about Worthington, he's been missed. I've missed him in the commentary, and you can see where going from Melbourne to Perth for him, I mean, he's totally disappeared. He was a bit burgeoning as a really good voice of the league, really biting, needed to kind of work on his diction a little bit on the mic, but he was really coming through. He has been, I want to make this on the, put it on the thing, he's been such a loss, his voice. He's young, he played, he was gutsy in his comments. I miss him a heck of a lot, just on the commentary of when he did it on occasion, but also on the podcast that he did with Felix on Trash Talk. He's been missed, and I want to sort of plant the seed of getting him back.
Yeah.
Those two, and then Anstey as well. I feel like those three they're really good, and they've just totally, all three of them disappeared, and it's not right. There, I said it.
Yeah, and Derek Rucker and 20 other guys.
Yeah. Guys, we're out of here. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. Buddy, say goodbye. Andrew, say goodbye.
It's a pleasure. Ciao.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.